Good morning. My name is Dave Sheridan. I'm with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. I'm going to be chairing the session this morning on proximity detection. We have a really good lineup of speakers today, and I think you're going to find these presentations very interesting. The four gentlemen we have are kind of prime movers in the development of proximity detection and have contributed heavily to this place where we are now with introducing proximity detection to underground coal mines. At this point, as of a week ago, we had 309 systems in operation in the United States, so we're making real good progress. MSHA is continuing to work on developing several rules that would require proximity detection on underground mining machines. Those rules were originally targeted a final rule on requiring proximity detection on continuous mining machines was due out in May. It didn't make it because of some normal delays, but it should be published before long. MSHA will be releasing its regulatory agenda in the next couple weeks, and that will be our formal announcement of when those rules are due out. The second one for other underground mobile machines would be a proposed rule, and we're looking for that sometime also late summer. Now, the four speakers we have today, we have Mike McMillian from Consol Energy that's done a lot in applying the different proximity detection systems to different type of machines. We have Mike Berube from Strata, that's one of the two major providers in the United States right now. We have Joe Dukarm from NIOSH that will be speaking about some of the work that they have done in terms of research for the development of proximity detection. And then finally, we'll have Eric Pryor from Matrix Design Group, who represents the second major provider of proximity detection. The first speaker is Michael McMillian from Consol Energy. Mike obtained a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering and a Master of Business Administration from West Virginia University. His entire career has been employed with Consol Energy in assignments in mining operations, maintenance, engineering, and R&D. He has developed directly and cooperatively with OEMs advanced systems for coal cutting and haulage in underground and surface mines. In mining operations as chief maintenance manager, organized the maintenance staff, planned support for mining activities, and solved equipment problems with all types of equipment. Currently working in Consol operations support, where the most important assignments are directed to engineer safety solutions into mining equipment. Mike.
Thank you, Dave. Is this, are we using this, or sometimes I like to walk around and wave my hands. Where's the, there it is. Give me a second, we'll get this started. Thank you, Dave. Okay, good deal. I want to talk about some of our experiences and processes and proximity systems we've applied, and some terms. First, they're going to the red zone. We're going to some terminology. The basics, how the system works, is the basic footprint of it. Mobile, there are two application areas. Most of our activity act has been in mobile equipment, mobile face equipment, and we've got plans here for longwall shields coming up, and I'll describe how that's going to work. Consol is basically going to move away from the term personal proximity detection to red zone alert. And the term you start with, it's a process of building on what your miners understand and what, you know, terms that they're used to, and apply that going forward. And so the first use of this that I'm aware of is, you know, the Virginia Department of Mines and U.S. District 5 come up with this chart to address the accumulation of fatalities on remote control miners. So the concept, there's a red zone. There's an area around the machine that you don't stand in or occupy when the machine's operating. In Consol now, currently even, in all our risk assessments, for all our guys working underground, we use the term red zone that gets identified in a risk assessment. And it's a common term that we apply universally to any risk scenario. For example, if you're pulling something with a winch and a rope stretched out, you know, you'll assess if that winch rope breaks, where can it fly to? If the termination breaks, there's an area that you could be impacted. So that becomes, they call it a red zone. So that'd be, it's our terminology. And going forward to this proximity detection is basically, it's a red zone. And this is we're going to use the term red zone alert. Just a little bit of background. You know, the question, this was 2000, what was the time period? Like about when this started, when NIOSH and about the year 2000. It's, you know, this question, how do you answer this? Looked at a lot of techniques, there's people still working on this, but for underground needs, the magnetic field, the medium frequency magnetic field is what got the nod as being effective for our needs underground. In the systems that we're going to apply, this is basically how it works. There's a medium frequency magnetic field generated around the machines. So there's basically a footprint called a marker field. Your miner has to wear the little electronics box. That box has two jobs. It's going to detect the strength of that field, and it predetermined trigger points will communicate with the machine that you can slow down or warn. There's different functions, or stop the machine depending on how close you are to it. So that's the basic footprint of it. Now, Consol's activity, this started with place change continuous miners, and we looked at this as the risk, not just for the miners, but there's risk from all your haulage and scoops also, and your longwall shield. So it's not just the miners that we felt this is applied to. In 2011, I've got them in red there, that our first installations were on a CAT place change miner at our Buchanan mine. We've been over 2 years, successful operation with that. In 2011 also, we got it was a section, we started our Bailey mines in Pennsylvania, which is loader, scoop, and two shuttle cars. We get into 2012 early, and we've got, you know, we worked through the bugs of that, and we had a lot of confidence in Strata's system at that time. So we said, we're gonna come up with this plan. And so early 2012, we developed a plan to implement company-wide on all our haulage equipment and place change miners. Very aggressive plan. We got into the middle of 2012. Strata had some issues we identified, had to be resolved. We basically put the brakes on the program. And that's starting to come back up to speed now that that's been resolved. But if you see, we have two miners in the last 3 months we put in operation. Bailey's getting ready here in this Alma mine. Alma's going to bring a miner on. Bailey's going to bring another section on. So we're coming, and we get back into our program of implementation. We currently have 56 machines. And so we started into this, we put the brakes on, so we didn't get, you know, that's why you see so many machines that have complete systems installed. There's 56 of those. We got 70 that we would call pre-wired. In our plan, within a year of the machines we expected to have running, we put full systems on, put all the hardware on the machine. It was all done at rebuild or new. We didn't do any of those underground. And then for these pre-wired versions, where we basically prepped the machine such that we could go underground and install a system, those were the longer term ones. We didn't want to put all that hardware on there, and then by the time you get to it, you know, you end up replacing it anyhow because it wouldn't be maintained. A real important part of this implementation is the management of the process. To get the results you desire, you don't just take all this hardware, hand it to your miners, and say, good luck. It's a recipe for a few weeks of disaster is what it is. So we, on each one of our implementations, we start out, it takes, everybody has to get on board. Superintendent, maintenance, they got to keep it running. Safety's got to support it. Section supervisors, everybody's going to be on board to stand behind this. So we start out with a classroom operating and maintenance instruction for all the crews before we show them the stuff, basically. And the show them is a cold start. And like, for example, at our Bailey mine, we did it at Buchanan also, but they basically turned the proximity detection system. It's all turned on, but it's not overriding the machine functions. So the guys get a chance to experience, you know, how it operates, what its functions are. They can ask questions before we actually make it active such that it overrides, which is the hot start. And we'll, you know, once we get through the cold start, it's typically a week, and we activate it, it's in full operation. And in these cases, we actually, you know, the rule was the machine's down if the detection system's down. So we had to maintain it. We were set up with parts, the whole bit. So there's a lot more to it than just in terms of man hours than just basically having the hardware, putting it on the machine, and hand it over to the operators. I'll tell, and then follow up and feedback. To one little story about this is something I learned. You talk about terminology. And so this first two classes we had in Bailey Mine, it's like this, I got a room of people. And I start to describe the system. And I say, well, we got this medium frequency magnetic field we generate. Boy, as soon as I said that, it's like, and you get that look, like, and I'll never forget that feeling. You stand in front of a whole group of people and they're looking at you like, so what I tell them now is, I say, hey, this is like an electric, you know, the invisible fence, like to keep your dog in the yard. And it's funny how you'll clue right up when you say that. And it said, the only difference is that you don't have to wear a shock collar, but you got to wear a box that'll beep at you and flash a light at you. And instead of keeping you in, it keeps you out. So that, you know, just common terms like that. You build on building on what people understand already instead of, you know, like I said, I'll never forget. Oh, it's medium frequency magnetic field. You know, it's like, this is just some demo of our shuttle car installation. This is the Stratted system. This is the pad. This is the box the operator wears. As you can see, it looks like a box for a cap, the old cap light, the lead acid or the older cap light battery. That's how it started its life out. This originated in South Africa. And our original plan was the electronics for the detection system is built into this box. And it had a cord and a cap lap and a headpiece and a sounder. And that's what we're going to use. Well, by the time, this is before Strat even got into it, it was Frederick Mine. By the time they got their IS approval, the market and basically industry come out with these cordless headpieces. So our mines had invested pretty much across the board in a cordless headpiece. So we just said, cut the cord, just give us the basic box. So that's, you know, time they get through the IS approval, that there's what we have for now. Now that's going to improve in the future, and Mike can even address that. So. But it has a light on top of there. It's rechargeable. It's got a little buzzer, and there's function buttons. You can actually got functions you can input from the operator. On the car, there was a pointer, a laser pointer. As you can see, there's the display. Well, yeah. There's a display pod that's feedback for the operator. It's an operator's compartment on shuttle car. Since the operator sits, you've got a kind of danger zone, which is where the machine is stopped. The operator's sitting inside that, so they actually have, there's a loop antenna around his seat, which actually creates what's called a silent zone, so he can sit in there and it won't inhibit the machine operation. Now, if he leans out of the car or gets out of that operator's compartment, they're going to shut the machine down. And then the controller box is an XP box right here. And all of Stratus system is wired into this box. There is one cable between this box and the machine. So it's literally an add-on package to the machine. This is one of their field generators. There's typically four of these on the machine. This hardware is all XP enclosures. It's not IS. Got a little video. This is the display pod, and it shows the functions. There's the two functions that come from the pad. And then he's walking.
Danger zone.
Now that warning and danger is as you walk closer to the machine, there's in this implementation, there's a warning in all our mobile equipment. There's a warning zone, and then there's the danger zone. And I was going to point this out to you because we thought this was interesting. We started with this. We wanted an alphanumeric display. And it was Fred who at the time said, well, this is what we got. We'd have to go build a whole new deal. So, okay, we'll try it. It's really quite efficient. We give our operators a pocket card to decipher the lights. And there's not a whole lot to it. But they don't have to read. They just look at the lights and they know what, you know, did somebody get in their danger zone? There's functions like if the light flashes, there's a fault. And so it doesn't take much. I mean, just an instant glance and you know what you have. You don't have to actually read on a display. It's worked out pretty well. I'm pleased with that. Here's another, just how it works on a shuttle car. I call this the looking down the barrel of the gun perspective. Now the operator, when he's driving it, he's just holding his foot on the accelerator. He's not hitting the brakes. He just holds his foot on the accelerator in the system. You can hear the tones also, that the warning is a beep, and then the danger zone is a solid tone, and the light, you can't see the light on there, but it does the same thing. Okay, we get into the longwall shield application. This is what we have planned. The CAT detect system is planned for, depending on approvals, I guess we'll see how that goes, but we're gonna hope in the third quarter, like August, that at our Robinson Run mine, we'll have the hardware. So we get through approvals, then we'll be starting it on that face. It's all new shields. A CAT system has got the marker field generator, and their communications is all in one black box. That's a big black box there. And then what the person wears is the tag. It's, you know, basically you can see the size of it. Now the tag in this case, it's a sealed unit. You don't recharge it. Now they're talking about a 2-year life, they hope, out of this. And then we'll have two classes of tags. We'll have one that's going to be a red color, it's for a visitor, and one that's like a regular operator. Now these tags, they have to be assigned a role. They have to be programmed in order to use them. And basically you get on the face, and I'll show you some more of this. That tag has to be initialized, and then the reader has to see it, and then it'll let you operate that shield. If you have a visitor's tag and you're on the shield, the safety functions are the only thing you can operate on that shield. So. And another thing I didn't mention earlier was all the activity in all these systems, everything that goes on, every tag or pad that gets in the zone or gets in communication, every function that happens gets recorded. So here on the shield, this picture, this PMCR controller. Behind here will be the reader, the black box. And we'll talk about, we're going with LED lights here in a second. Here's the black box nested in front of this leg cylinder. There's one on each shield. Now, basically how it operates. We're just looking at one shield. So the oval circle is the marker field. So the operator, the miner, once he enters that marker, that reader sees him and says, you're on this shield. What we're gonna do in the implementation is we're gonna add the shield to both sides of that and create basically an umbrella or we call it an alert zone. But that zone is where the inhibit takes place. We're gonna inhibit auto sequences. We won't inhibit manual functions on the shields, just the auto sequences. Now we put a face together. Typically more than one reader is gonna pick you up. I mean, the marker fields overlap, so typically you're gonna have these two readers will pick you up, then you're gonna add one to both sides. We have an overall alert zone. If you're standing in one place and shields are auto, say the shear's pulling shields and it comes up to you, if you're there already and the shield goes into an auto sequence and it sees you there, it's gonna hold it for probably 10 seconds and give you a chance to get out of that area. And so we can continue on the auto sequence. If you don't get out of that area, then it's gonna shut the shields down and activate the dump valve, which is the reset for that'll be button presses on the PMCR. Then the other part of that is if you walk into, it's like the dynamic situation, if there's a shield and auto sequence and you walk into that, it's an immediate, you don't get any chance to recover. The shields are already moving, so that's an immediate shutdown of the shields and activation of the dump valve. Now, the LED lights, there's gonna be light on each shield. The lights plug directly into the PMCR. There's no separate power system and no another network for the lighting. But there's gonna be three colors available. The ones we're gonna use in a normal activation, we're gonna have white and red on the shield. So when the shield starts an auto sequence, basically we're gonna flash it red. So the operators, this really doesn't have anything to do with the red zone system or the detection system. It wouldn't have to be on there, but it is a feature. It makes it real easy for operator to see like what shields and auto sequence. And I would say our most value will be like, when the shear's pulling shields behind it, the guys can see exactly where that is. Some of them have tasks behind the shear, so. And one thing is like now we say, well, you can't be on a shield that's moving. This is gonna, like talking about that alert zone, so you got a broader window that you're gonna have to be aware of that. As you're on the face, you've got a shield or two beyond where you're standing that's gonna be, could potentially shut the face down. A little bit more of the process. Okay, if you go on you got your tag, you go on the face. At the head gate and the tailgate, We got a blue light. This is not part of the illumination, but it's not turned on. But when you step onto the face of the head gate or the tail, it's going to get a flash of a blue light, which is an indicator that the system sees you on the face. And now it's got you on the face, and it expects to see you. As you go from the overlap and the readers, it'll never lose the tag that you're wearing. It'll always see you no matter where you are in the face. If it does, if something happens and it loses track of a tag, it's a lost tag, shuts the face down. Because if a guy drops his tag, or there's a lot of scenarios that you shouldn't lose your tag once you're on the face. Now, to exit the face, so how do you get off the face without, tripping this feature, is we're going to have a palm button at the head and the tail both. So as the miners leave the face, they're going to have to hit a palm button, which says, I'm exiting, this tag that you see right now, I'm exiting the face. So you don't get the lost tag function. Make some closing comments. The mobile equipment applications we've seen, to me, some things that are really important, they're fast, and the stability. Once we set up marker zones on machines, we don't have to go back and keep tweaking them and tweaking them. We can go months, and we go back in, we check where we've set these marker zones, and the dimensions haven't changed. It's really important in the system, so I call it stability. As I mentioned before, all these installations have been done when we've had the machine outside while it's being rebuilt or in new construction. It would be very difficult in the systems we've installed. I wouldn't want to do it. To go underground on a machine that's had no prep on it and put it on, it's going to be time-consuming, it's going to be inefficient, and you're going to end up with a system that's going to give you headaches from then on, because you won't get it done right. And further for all the, and this is ongoing. Everybody's working on systems. There's other companies coming into it. One of the things that I think is really important is we talk about the tag, is the size, and our complaint with Strata is, they've got this big box. And our operators, they should have seen their faces talk about it. So we come up, our mines have, they got with the cordless headpieces. Oh, they got rid of a box, they're great. So at our Bailey mine, we implemented that section. We go in there and we say, hey, guess what, guys? You got to put this back on. And they're not too happy about that. But this guy is the typical miner setup. This guy has 5 battery-powered devices on it. 5. And if we talk about a red zone system, that's 6. He has 6. That would make 6 battery-powered devices. In the future, we've got to get these things integrated. We've got to get tracking. We've got, communications. And there's schemes and concepts being worked on, but that really has to happen. We really have to help this guy out. Last thing I want to make a comment about is that when we started this on the continuous miners, I wondered, how's this going to end up? What kind of effect are we going to get? What are the guys going to do with it? And, are we doing the right thing or not? And in the last few months, I've gone around to all our operations where we're running place change continuous miners, interviewed multiple miner operators, catch them between shifts. So I've got to talk. Every single one of them, the only complaint, the only comment they've had really is, when they're changing place, say, I can't get close enough to the machine. The system, and that was the jump start for this whole program was, the fatalities, and most of them were when we'd be changing place, moving the miner from one place to another. That's where most of them happen. So in this process of changing place, this is where the complaint is, I can't get close enough to the machine. Really, we think they're driving the miner. What they're really doing, the reality is, they're moving their cable. Their eyes are on their trailing cable and their water hose that they use the miner to drag from one place to another. That's the job in their mind that's number one. And they really, and the truth is, they lose sight of, and they lose, and this is like multitasking, and there's been a lot of studies because now, people texting in their cars, and there's a lot of studies on this. As humans, we can only do and think and respond to one thing at a time. And we focus on one thing, we literally will not observe other things around us. And I think this is the crux of what got this whole thing started. And I'm glad to hear this comment. The system forces the guys away from the machine. It forces them to not do what's not on their mind. And so to me, it's a validation that we're doing the right thing. This is the guy we have to keep in mind. As we go forward, we got to keep behind. Everybody's, and there's a lot of thanks. I got to thank a bunch of people. There's a lot of people in Saul, There's vendors, suppliers. A lot of people put their heart and soul into developing these products. It's going to continue. Our agencies, I mean, there's a lot of efforts gone into this. It needs to continue, and it's really worthwhile. It's worth it. And it's for this guy right here. It's not for us. It's for him. We have a duty to do everything we can in our power to see that this guy gets home safe and sound every day. And this, I think this is really a product that will help to that means. That's all I had. So. Are you going to take questions later? Or?
Yeah, we're going to take questions.
Oh, now. Okay.
Does anyone have any questions for Mike? Okay. Well, I got a couple for you, Mike. On your last slide, you had a bullet there about the marker field, something.
I didn't want to drag it on too long. That was basically it's continuous improvement of the systems. The marker field shape, it's going to be tuned. You know, now we're working with generalized shapes. There's NIOSH has got schemes, and I know Strata's got schemes, and other companies. Matrix. They've all improving their ability and precision. That's what's about, making it better in terms of precision and shape and accuracy, too.
And then another question for you. You mentioned that Consol intends to put the proximity detection on all their scoops, shuttle cars, place-changing miners, and loaders. Do you know what the time frame for that is?
It's years. We don't know. Yeah, it's years. We're going to start, and our Pennsylvania mines will be first. And when I show you those 56 pieces of equipment, that are full installations, those are our place change miners and the equipment that we have in our Bailey mine operations. We don't have that information. That's a tough one to answer too. No matter, even you get a long time frame. Even like fatality rates on the miners is so low. Really it's low, but it's still an issue. But that's going to take, I think, an industry-wide, like across the board in mining to apply that to. I tell you something else, that's exactly right. You can see people, it sort of gives you a place where people are and where they're standing. These will be assigned to names, so you know what the guy's job was. If he starts showing up, why is he around that machine? And that's, that's the sort of thing you sort out too. One thing I was going to mention just real quick, but we talk about the fatalities. Anytime I talk to our miner operators, they start telling multiple stories about injuries. It's not just the fatalities too, it's the injury rate. That's probably something we could get a handle on, because that doesn't even make the radar here, that hasn't so far, but the reality is there's guys running these miners that they break a bone, a finger, they smash a leg. It's not a fatality, but there's a pile of those. Okay. Our Boulder miners. Right now, I didn't get deep into this. These implementations, I'm going to call it, you have to make allowances. Like the shuttle car is the cleanest application. There's no job to do around it. In haulage in general, coal haulers, shuttle cars, both. You just got to stay away from it. So it becomes what I call a really clean, simple, really effective implementation. We get on machines where they got rock dusters. The guys have to stand beside the machine. Now you have to alter the machine response to allow a guy to get by the machine to do a job. Boulders, in this case, the Boulder miner. We really don't have a clean way to we got two Boulder operators on both sides of that machine. It's normal operation at the face. Once you make allowances for all that, you've cut so many holes in the system, so to speak, that we haven't implemented it, because really we compromise it so much that we felt a more bang for our buck immediately was on our haulage and scoops. Will that be required, he said.
Yeah, I'll get that. Yeah. Do we have a microphone? That, oh, okay. So so maybe when you, if you have a question, we could come up, step up to the microphone. But the gentleman from Caterpillar, I believe, asked a question about the requirements for Boulder miners. Was that your? Was that what you? I'm kind of in a bad position here. They don't like me. I'm involved with the MSHA rulemaking, and they don't like me to talk about what's in draft on those regulations. But I can say that when we proposed the rule in August of 2011 for continuous miners, we excluded full-face continuous miners or the in-place miners, and most of our commenters supported that exclusion, with the argument being they don't move, change places, which was the most hazardous action of those continuous mining machines, and we have experienced no accidents on full-face miners at this point, no fatal accidents, and limited number of non-fatals that we're aware of as well. Does anyone have any more questions for Mike? Well, thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah.
I did want to comment on the question. I think Keith O'Neill asked a question. No, it wasn't you. You answered the question about accidents and whether we have any indication of whether proximity detection is having a positive effect on crushing accidents. And that is something that's going to be difficult to tell. All we'll be able to look at over the long term is a trend. One thing I know is, as far as I know, we've had no accidents on machines that are equipped with proximity detection, and I think that's the indication we're looking for. I also want to thank Mike McMillian and Consol Energy for their proactive work in applying proximity detection to the machines at Consol. They're setting some examples, and we're learning a lot from the work that they've done at their mines, particularly by installing the systems on shuttle cars, scoops, loaders, and now their work on longwalls. They were the first I know of to try proximity detection on shuttle cars, and that was it's been real beneficial to us to see that those systems work equally well on those machines as they do on continuous miners. Okay, our next speaker is Mike Berube from Strata Products. Mike joined Strata Worldwide in early 2010. He brought with him more than 20 years of experience in sales, business management, and product development. Before joining Strata, Mike served as Director of Global Data Solutions for Argonne ST, now Boeing. While at Argonne, he led a business unit that successfully won and completed several DARPA programs focused on wireless communications, wireless networking, and satellite communications. In addition, Mike leveraged much of the technology developed for the U.S. government and transferred it to industrial applications such as the mining, oil, and gas. With this technical knowledge and experience, he has played a key role in developing the electronic safety products Strata now offers. As President and COO of Strata Worldwide, Mike oversees day-to-day operations, strategy, sales, and marketing with responsibility for bottom-line profitability. He is also actively involved in the management of Strata Proximity Systems' worldwide operations. Mike,